Ever feel like your energy, focus, and recovery could use some extra support? Quicksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly without any added fillers. When I was in the middle of what seemed to be a personal health crisis, Quicksilver Scientific was one of the brands I could always trust to get an effective, high-quality product. I remember using some of their liposomal nutrients and detoxification supplements. Every formula is designed with advanced liposomal delivery that wraps nutrients in tiny spheres your body recognizes, helping them absorb quickly so you get more from every dose. They have clean formulations, non-GMO, no unnecessary fillers, and they're allergen tested. Quicksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/mindfulmovement. That's tryqs.com/mindfulmovement. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You know how people say age is just a number? Well, turns out they were kind of right. Your calendar age doesn't always reflect how old your body actually is. I recently learned this when I took the True Age test from True Diagnostic. I was a little nervous to find out my real age, but get this, my biological age came back 6 years younger than my actual age. I was considering hanging my results on the fridge like we did for our kiddos when they were little. But here's the thing, it wasn't just a vanity boost. The test showed how different systems in my body are aging, like my brain, heart, immune system, and metabolism. Apparently, my brain is doing great, but my metabolic health needs a little TLC, so now I've got personalized tips, backed by science, to improve that and slow aging overall. And honestly, the test was super easy. Just a painless finger prick, pop the sample in the mail, and a couple weeks later, I had this incredibly detailed report that made me rethink how I eat, sleep, and manage stress. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code MINDFUL to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code MINDFUL at checkout. Your future self will thank you.
The molecule DMT, a lot of people do DMT and they see these machine elves that show up while they're on that molecule. Now we know, I'm going to tell you now because I read this, the brain releases DMT in very, very small amounts. I don't know if it's all the time, but some of the time. So maybe I turn mine on or open it up just enough where I can see these things. The question with the DMT is, and this is the question that people that study those molecules say, are they in the mind or are they outside of the mind? I think we can absolutely do a test where I could be the control, have five guys on DMT. Let's see if this, we all see the same machine elf or whatever shows up. Not only if we see it, right? Is that machine elf, because they send messages to all the people that are tripping. Is it the same message everybody will get? We can test these kind of things.
Tom, Matt, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
I am glad to be here today, Les.
So, thank you. Last week, you offered your services and we had a, I guess, upsite vision where you did some magical stuff that I'm sure you'll get into, reading, I don't know if it's my mind or what exactly. I'm sure you'll give us the hows, whats, and whys about it. But first of all, I just wanted to offer my gratitude for taking your time to do that. It's given me some things to think about over the last week.
Yeah, no, great. I enjoy doing it. Yeah, that's funny. And that's a really good way to put it. When you say reading mind, I like to tell people it's definitely not mind reading. I can't read a thought that you have, and I can't look at a deep, dark secret. It seems like there's this middle ground that organically I can access the reason why we'll get into in a minute. And with your permission, I can see what's there. The best thing I could say, the best way to describe it for people is, can you imagine if you could have somebody access your dreams, right? While you were dreaming, you can access them with giving them permission. This is kind of like that. That's the best way to describe it. And I've been doing it with people for about 6-7 months now. But I've had this ability for about 13 years, and I call it upside vision, which is the ability to see and interact with holographic images that are everywhere around us. When I do the reading, like I did with you, I don't interact with it. I just see it and describe it. Like it's like a dog has the dog whistle. They can only hear. For whatever reason, I can see this thing emanating from people. And that's okay. What I did with you.
Well, I have a lot of questions. Okay. One, you already alluded to permission. I remember in the session, you made it clear to ask for my permission first. If somebody said no there, is there like a blockage where you don't get the signal?
Well, I don't know because I haven't tried. I haven't tried that. I think the answer would be no. Just like you and I are both participating in this conversation, right? We're doing this willingly. So it's not like I could go up to somebody in, let's say, a public place, sit next to them or sit behind them on a bench and, you know, find the space. Now, I say I don't think I could do that. I've never tried it because that would be very creepy.
Right.
No, I have not tried that. Maybe it's possible, but it feels really important to get the permission because the things I see are, again, they're not the deep dark secrets and they're not the mind, but it's the stuff that you would share with a trusted person or a mentor or a loved one or a therapist or whoever, somebody that, you know, you confided in.
Okay. Well, for the listeners, that session on my end looked like us on a call like this. And then you, I guess, took a moment to move rooms to a different space. I think you said it was a darker room where received something from my, aura or what, like, what was it? What are you doing? What are you tapping into?
Okay, let me take a step back. I'll answer that question, but we'll take a step back first. So about 13 years ago, I came out of a mental health crisis and strong addiction issues with this ability to see these holographic images, as I told you. I call it upside vision. After that happened, I was like, okay. And let me be really clear. I wrote a book about this. It's called Jesus Goes to Hollywood, A Memoir of Madness. And I completely disconnected from reality. I lost my business. I lost my family temporarily. I was heavily into drugs, right? I thought my brain was rewired from that. While I came out of that, I realized I had this ability. As I had this ability, I thought to myself, and I told my wife, I'm like, listen, any kind of gift like this comes with a curse, so I'm sure I'm going to have a tumor or lesion or something, and I'm going to be gone. I've seen enough movies. I had two separate MRIs, and there's no damage to the brain. Nothing's wrong, no stroke. No lesion, no brain tumor, no damage from drug use. So the clinician said, listen, something must have been rewired for you to receive this, and you're picking up and you're seeing something other people can't see. And that sat with me for a while, but since then, I've talked to people about this, I've talked about it on podcasts, and that is not the number one thing. And other people can do this, by the way, Les. So we'll get to that too. Trauma seems to be the thing that opens this up. I would have said it's going to be addiction or some kind of rewiring from some kind of overuse of drugs, but it's not. There's many people who've never done drugs that they have this ability to one degree or another. So that's something that's really interesting. I can talk about the science, quantum entanglement. I'll use the buzzwords that everybody knows. You're thousands of miles away from me. It works. I don't know how it works. If I've done it, I can do it with people in the room. I can do it with people on the other side of the world. And after we connect, there's some connection, again, that's beyond any science that we can, you know, show and measure, that we connect. And I see things there. You give me permission and I see what's there. Now, go ahead.
What do you think's going on within your mind in doing so? I mean, do you think, I know nothing shows up on MRI, do you think you're accessing a different part of the brain that's just there, that's kind of dormant in most cases? Or do you think it's like an antenna that just turns on, like people speak of, like maybe the pineal gland, how it has like a ability to kind of open up and receive information that's flowing through that we're just not in the everyday basis, like tuned into that channel, if you will?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it is. I think there's the brain is a receiver, obviously. And I think mine opened up more or tuned in better. Maybe both of those, right? Something happened and I can tune in. And let's be clear, I just have to shift my attention, focus my eyes, and I see it. I can see a holographic image that's there now. I don't want to do it now, but it will be there. Now, where is that one coming from? Right? I know once I see it and engage with it, let's say it's a guy riding a bike. first of all, I have no idea where that one's coming from. It's just there, maybe like listening to a car drive by or whatever. However, once I engage with it, I can change the guy riding a bike into a man juggling. So now there's an interaction with the pineal gland, the brain, whatever receiver it is, and there's a conversation, and I can interact. Again, when I do readings, I don't interact. I just see what's there because I don't want to influence it, because it's your side. That's a different thing that we're doing. So I absolutely believe it's a receiver. I'm receiving these things. My brain fine-tuned into it. It stayed open, and even though we can't measure with an MRI, I did go to the Institute of Noetic Sciences in August of 2023, and we did there's a scientific paper coming out near the end of this year. It's a case study on me measuring my brain waves in this state, right? During upside vision, seeing it as opposed to memory recall and mind's eye. Because everyone, when I talk about this, oh, that's just a vivid imagination. It is indeed not the same thing. Those things are generated internally. And I used to own an advertising agency, so I know what that's like. I had a vivid mind's eye, and I still do. This is outside of me, and I can see it. And they know that. Because of the EEG waves is the test. We'll get into that in a minute. But before that, before I had any science, I knew my pupils dilated when I saw something exciting. There's something called smooth pursuit eye movement, right? You can't fake it. You have to, when your eye is smooth pursuing something, following it, it's smooth. That's why they call it smooth pursuit. So in other words, if I'm looking at a blank wall, or you and I are sitting next to each other, and it looks like a blank wall to you, and I'm seeing a cheetah run across it, my eyes will follow this cheetah. So that's another way. And another way is when I'm driving. I cannot do this when I'm driving because my motor activity is focused on the road, right? I can certainly use my vivid mind's eye and memory recall while I'm driving, but I can't do this because I have to look at the image that is there. Now,
so it never turns on its own. You have to have an intention to.
So maybe a better way to say it is it's always on, but I have to turn my attention to it, right? It's always on, but I have to turn my attention to it.
When you mentioned the word holographic, I think a moment ago, are you saying it looks like a 3D image in front of you, like a few feet in front of you, or?
Yeah, great question. So I'll give two references here because most people have seen one or the other. A couple of years ago, actually probably five now, there was a movie or a miniseries on Netflix called The Queen's Gambit.
I remember that. That was good.
Yeah, it was great, right? The protagonist laid in bed. And when I saw this, I was incredible because the protagonist says she's laid in bed and look at the ceiling. She was a chess master. She could see these chess pieces on the ceiling and she could move them. That's exactly what I can do with upside vision. Okay, and those were three-dimensional to her. If you haven't seen that, there's a scene in all the Iron Man movies where Tony Stark is in his office and he's surrounded by a holographic universe, right? He can swipe left and swipe right. I can't do the swiping left, and I can't pull like a file. But they are that vivid, that detail, that they can be that vivid, that detail. Here's the thing, which was I had to learn this in the very beginning. All because they're that vivid, that detailed, it doesn't mean they're true, Les, right? It's like waking up from a dream thinking everything you happened in the dream is true. No, it's vivid. You remember it. These are like that. That's why I use the dream. It's a perfect a reference everybody understands. So, yes, the answer is yes. They are like those holograms.
So it's funny you say like it's a dream because I've heard different theories around – really like where dreams are coming from. And some people think that some of these endogenous, I guess like psychoactive chemical compounds, like hallucinogens, like DMT that we produce are what's driving the dream state. Do you get a feeling that there's like a chemical component to it like that, where you are like, I know I've done, for instance, breathwork sessions where it seemed like it would trigger a temporary like hallucination where I could see like an image. If I closed my eyes, it was kind of right in front of me, and I thought that maybe like I poked that section, like I had enough I think it's like they call it maybe piezoelectric something, where there's like a mechanical force that transduces into an electrical thing and, you know, like changes your chemical makeup somehow. Like, Do you think that that's what's going on? That you're like, we have these chemicals that float around, but they're at a certain level. And then if you, whether maybe through attention or breath work or a chemical from nature, a compound, like you like ignite that. And then when it's flowing, when your levels of that are flowing, or maybe when they're flowing in a different area of the brain, like you create dreams. And that's where like dreams come from, where I've heard people say that that's stimulated during near-death experiences. Like it happens right before death. For whatever reason, people have different opinions of that. Could that be what's going on, where you're just like on your own drugs, if you will?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. It's a great way to say it. Yeah, and yes to everything you said, right? Let's go through each one perhaps. So the molecule, the molecule DMT, a lot of people do DMT and they see these machine elves that show up while they're on that molecule. Now we know, I'm going to tell you now because I read this, the brain releases DMT in very, very small amounts. I don't know if it's all the time, but some of the time. So maybe I turn mine on or open it up just enough where I can see these things. The question with the DMT is, and this is the question that people that study those molecules say, are they in the mind or are they outside of the mind? I think we can absolutely do a test where I could be the control, have five guys on DMT. Let's see if this, we all see the same machine elf or whatever shows up. Not only if we see it, right? Or is that machine elf, because they send messages to all the people that are tripping. Is it the same message everybody will get? We can test these kind of things. Another test you can have about how the brain releases chemicals or gets into a certain state is that there's something called Charles-Binet syndrome. That's where people have you're going blind. I can't think of the word. Degeneration, macular degeneration. That's it. When that happens, older people sometimes they start hallucinating and seeing things. And a lot of people, and this was discovered like I guess 150 years ago, they thought they were going crazy because they were seeing these things in their field of vision. Well, that's why it's named after the Dr. Charles-Binet that discovered it. Well, they're not. There's nothing mentally. There's no mental illness going on. But my theory is, and they just start seeing hallucinations, right? Now they learn they're not there. They learn to deal with them. Some people take drugs to get rid of them. Others are like, wait a minute. So I'm not going crazy, but this is kind of cool. I don't mind when these things and people show up. So they live with it, right? And I'm thinking to myself, again, I was doing all this studying. That's kind of like maybe something going on with me. They're going blind, but the brain is screaming, saying, hey, listen, the normal eyes are going blind, but this part of the brain can still see this biofield, this plasma field, whatever we want to call it, that's out there. And we can still communicate that way. So I talked about, the answer to your questions a little way. The answer is there's so many things that we can test, right, around this, and who knows where it's going to land. But I think receiver, some kind of chemical opened up with me, but it can open up through trauma, for me both. And then really important, turning the attention to it. That's what you have. When you have meditation, a focused attention is huge. It's a wonderful, wonderful, huge skill. And these things open up and chemicals can be released and so many things change under meditation, to your point. So all those things should be studied and looked at more. But for whatever reason, here's what I say. It's like singing, right? Everybody can sing, but everybody cannot be Adele or Frank Sinatra, okay? So somebody, if they know they can do this, I feel like this is, you can do it, but everybody can't be, even if they wanted to be.
You could get better if you practice at it.
Definitely. I've gotten stronger at it when it was good in the beginning, but I'm surprised how, I don't want to say in focus because you're always in focus. Maybe how I hold it longer because nothing is static. It's always moving like clouds. It's always, always moving. And they're usually clear with a color tint.
You mentioned like trauma and drugs. Like, do you think that plays a certain role and why? And what kind of drugs were you on that?
My drug of choice was Coke. Right.
Okay.
And I think
cocaine, not
cocaine.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the stimulant I learned in college that I studied on Coke and I would do better. So it was kind of a bad, it was, I mean, for a while, it was great. But so the brain is
Yeah,
stimulated.
cocaine's great until
Yeah.
it
Until
isn't.
it's not. Right. Until it's
I
not.
had a cocaine phase myself.
Yeah, right. It's great until it's not. But so for me, it was a stimulant. But trauma is the number one thing everyone talks about. I don't know. Something happens to the brain when people go through really severe physical, psychological, mental, sexual trauma, and their brain changes. And disassociation. I can't begin to think about the science around it, other than the fact there is trauma induced, and people have it from that. Now, as far as the ability to see and interact with it, most people, right, the ones that come forward with me, and every time I talk about this, I get emails from people saying they have it. I wrote a PDF called The 8 Stages of Upside Vision. These are the stages that I went through. And also there are levels that I'm at. Some of these, so different levels. One of the levels is seeing the holograms, but not being able to change them with a thought, right? So you can see these holograms show up, but you can't change a race car into a bicycle. There's a lot of people that can see them, but can't change them.
So you think that's some sort of like progression through,
so
like you get one and then
So
with it?
I've talked to some people, and I don't teach this, by the way. I want to be really clear about that. I always ask if I'm a teacher. I don't feel I'm ready to teach it because I'm not completely a master of it yet. I do these readings, but that's not the same thing. But I've told everyone, if you can see it at some point, I don't know why you can't change it with a thought. So yes, I could. If you're that far along, I think if you meditate and focus and practice, you can change it with a thought. Here's the thing. This takes a lot of work. Okay. When I came out of my crisis, I had nothing. I've lost everything. My wife took me back, and the family's back together, and all that stuff. My business, no. Finance is gone. Right. This is going back a dozen years, or 13 years now. For 1 year, I literally sat on the couch and I thought about mathematics, and I did this all day long. So I don't want to say, I don't know if I want to say it's a muscle, but it's muscle-ish. It feels like a muscle. A meditation muscle may be a better way to put it, right? That's maybe discipline is a better way to put it. Once I tuned in, yeah. So I think the answer is yes. I
What
think.
was, like, the very first one? Like, how
Okay.
did you
I'd love
discover, like,
to.
oh, I'm, 'cause I would think if you, the first time you do it, you see something, you probably would assume there's a serious problem going on.
Great question. So this is first time I did it, I was in fact on drugs, but it was the last time I also used drugs. And I also knew when I saw these the first time, even it's wild. I knew at that moment, I'm like, I'm on drugs right now, but I know I can do this without it. I just knew it, right? All right, I'm going to say the first four ones because they're symbolic. And I didn't realize the symbolism till years later. But there, I, you know, and I will get into that. The first one was the back of a dinosaur. And these all morphed into one another. This all happened in like a couple of minute period. The back of a dinosaur, blood moving through the body, blood cells, like a close up of that, a slot machine with a bunch of money coming out of it, and then the Grim Reaper. Right? Those were the first ones. And I was like, wow. Now, if I take a step back and over time, I'm like, hold on a minute. If we want to look at this from symbolic, the dinosaurs could represent the past, distant past. Life is blood moving through the body, could be life. Survival, we need money for survival, right? And then death, inevitable death. So it took me the longest time to actually sit and think about that. But I find that interesting now with some distance on it, that those are the four things that I saw, or those are the first four symbolic things that I saw. And that's the kind of thing we get into when I do the readings with people, right? It's like reading a dream. Some dreams you have, they're just, you wake up, nobody cares. Sometimes you wake up from a dream, you're like, you're not going to believe this. And you feel so good. And the readings are kind of like that. Some of them are like, well, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me, you know? And it takes a while to unpack it. Some of them are like, I sit there and say dreams, but I've literally seen something that a woman did the day before. Like unpacking, I'm like, well, I'm watching you unpack a lamp. And at the end of the first reading, she's like, how did you know that? I said, I don't know what I'm looking at in your biofield. She's like, I literally came back from the store yesterday and I pulled this lamp out of a box. I bought a lamp and I put a, so,
When
you know.
you do these readings for people, where they're giving you permission, so they're in some on some level they're opening up, at least as far as intention, for you to receive whatever signal. Do you feel like in most cases what you're seeing is a symbolic connection?
So I think, Yeah, it's another great question.
And is there any chance that like some of it is just nonsense and it means nothing and it just happens to be what you're seeing? Or like, could you be pulling something else from someone else in their house at the time?
No, that is, both of those questions are great. And the answer is yes, I can definitely be pulling somebody else, because I was doing a woman's reading and her husband was off screen next to her. And I said something and I'm like, well, that's not me, that's my husband. And I'm like, well, he's not there. And she's like, he's sitting right here. And I didn't know this. Right? Now, as far as nonsense, you know, I somebody said that one of the times, and I was like, well, that doesn't seem fair. But you know what? If you have a dream and you wake up from it and you don't, it's a ridiculous dream. The answer is yes. It can be what we could call nonsense. However, if we're looking at it with an intention and you're coming with an intention to do this reading, the nonsense ones, they seem to diminish and the meaningful ones come out near the end. But I wouldn't even call the first one nonsense. I would just say we don't know the significance of them. Exactly. And wait, you asked another part of the question, but I think I answered it. Yeah. So I don't think they're nonsense, but some of them are less meaningful. Oh, the symbolism, right? So I saw a woman pull a lamp out of something she literally did. So I don't know. There's some snapshots of that. And even with past lives, I saw this woman in Spain. She was just Spain, 1490. I'm like, this is Spain. Looks like it's 500 years ago. And I saw all these symbolic things of Catholics in Spain and stuff like that. That was definitely her background. She thought she had past lives. Who knows? I mean, honestly, who knows? Right. It was a great read. These are fun for me, too. When I see these things coming from people, it's awesome.
So when we did our reading, or when you did the reading with me, the first thing that came up, I thought at first was like really strange, and I've given it some thought, but it was, if I recall, it was a horse costume that had two people in it, like one in the front and one then, and I took it as like me and my wife were in a costume, and it went really weird from there. Like it opened up and there was a boat floating between us, like it lost me. But it's funny because the costume thing actually resonated with me a little bit symbolically. Like, you know, my wife has online YouTube channel, multiple channels. I have the podcast, and in some way there's been part of me that since, you know, we've been doing all this, I think about how you're not the person on camera that you are with that when you're not on camera. Like, it's impossible not to be wearing a costume. And part of that is like bothered me over the years. And part of me feels like, well, maybe that's part of the goal, to make that the delta there between the public you and the private you, whatever, diminish, and learn how to do that through some kind of personal growth where you can truly, I mean, it's hard to say you could truly be yourself when you're on camera, because you, like, who's to say you're more yourself when you're not on camera, and your real self is, I don't know. But it is something, like, I have thought of the fakeness component of being, like, everything related to social media or online personality, you know, that it's impossible to be same. And it's been like a bother of mine, because if there's always been like a little bit of fakeness, like I try to be myself when I'm doing these podcasts, for instance, but like I withhold a lot of things for a lot of reasons. A lot of it is like, for instance, maybe like I'm super opinionated about a lot of things that I never give my opinion on here because it's not a good platform for it. Like, for instance, if you have a political opinion, like online politics is horrible. Like it's the worst way to try to discuss anything that's really important. Like if you think of all the big political divisive things, they're all like really important things that deserve like long nuanced conversation. But the comment section of online stuff is not a place where you can do that. So it's just like a cesspool. So I don't even want to. But there's part of me that's like, man, you can't even feel comfortable being yourself and saying how you really feel. And to me, it's always felt a little bit like a costume.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it makes complete sense to me. And I, you know what? Getting into the politics online, I can't even imagine the you can't even – those people, I don't think they can be themselves, right? Because imagine you go in, you're yourself, but you're going to alienate somebody unless you stay in this certain tribe. I think that would be – I think it would be impossible.
And then you're going to be attacked by half the people and then
– Exactly.
And then you're reacting to the attack. So now you're your defensive, like, lesser self.
Yeah. Well, you know what's cool about that, too, that you reminded me. So I remember in the reading, you guys sat on the end of a curb and you both had your costumes to the side, I believe. And you were like kind of thinking about what to do, right? You took your costume off, if I'm remembering. So, yeah, maybe this is – and this is what this does. This jogs a transition place or something to for people to think about in a way they may not have before through a new lens. So yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting. And you know what you do now with meditation, this has its own tribe too. Let's not kid ourselves, you know. There's no doubt that people do things a certain way in this space, which is great. And the goal is to be zen and to be calm and to connect. But people do it in different ways, and people can be hardcore about their opinion on how to do it.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think we look at meditation as a tool in the toolkit, and we just offer, hey, like, we want to, and on some level, we strive to, like, help people, inspire or empower people to just play a larger role in their sense of well-being, whatever that means for them. And in today's world, we look at stillness or, you know, looking inward as a powerful tool to try to manage the human experience. So we just offer it up there. We're not very dogmatic about it. We don't tell people there's a way to do it or a better way or you should this or should that. We just, like, there's a lot of tools for health and wellness in general. And, the important thing is to find the ones that, like, work for you.
Listen, that's very well said. And that's the beautiful thing about your podcast, because being still and focusing your attention is the currency of the future, right? And the currency of growth, change, and everything like that. If you have the ability to meditate or do something for an hour, this is before even digital and stuff. But if you can do it now, it seems like it's even getting harder and harder. But if I am in any indication, the payoff is huge, right? The payoff is huge. And I know that's why people listen to your podcast. They, you know, they're like, okay, I know this makes sense. Because after an hour of meditation, you literally feel different. You can't have a meditation session. Well, I guess you could. It's never happened to me. You know, be forced to it. You're going to change after the hour, right? Yoga, you're going to feel better after that, whether you want to or not. I know that sounds weird, but it's been my experience anyway.
Yeah, and also, like, there's two sides to that, because when you are still, it might prep you to be more productive or something or create something, but also you're not getting anything done. So, like, when you look at people that are super productive, they might not be, like, happy or successful in other ways, but, yeah, they're not ones to do that because they work 16 hours a day, like you think of, I don't know, the Elon Musk of the world, where you're, like, the people that are running large organizations that are creating lots of stuff that people wind up using, and it contributes to, I don't know, the GDP or society or productivity. It's like they don't have time. They don't make time to do that. It's like there's benefits of being ADD and nonstop and never being still. It's like, you know, there's 8 billion people and we all go about it differently.
Okay, so this is a great point. So when I started doing this, I had no idea who was going to come forward and spend the money to do this. So I thought it was going to be woo-woo. That was the word. I had no idea. Metaphysics. The number one thing is business owners, female business owners, very successful. Unbelievable. And in the number one, right on the tail, number two, musicians and people in the creative space. But women who are successful, who are intuitive, there's something there that they understand that they can get out of this. And those people are also, to your point, they're successful, but they got the balance going on, or they're looking for the balance. Now, they're not Elon Musk, obviously. There's only so many of those. But I promise you this, he could certainly probably use an hour of yoga and he would feel better after it, an hour of any kind of grounded meditation. But it's wild to there's this knowing audience, there's this knowing people out there that they know there's something more as opposed to just being productive, because that's not healthy. I mean, it's not healthy at all, you know, and that's why people do drugs, turn to everything, every more addiction, more. That's why, you know, yoga and meditation and what I kind of help people, you know, look at other things that are available.
So switch gears a little bit. So I want to understand a little bit more of how you experience this. So if you wake up, you're saying this is on all the time, like you always have images in the room. And if you rest your attention on them, you could start like
engaging,
and then it'll change, and you could kind of lead it to change to a certain thing if you want. But it's always like physically there in your space, a three-dimensional hologram-ish looking thing.
Yeah, it's like a radio station that's on, because it is a signal. I mean, whatever kind of signal this plasma field, nobody knows yet. But it is a signal that I just need to turn my attention to. That simple. And I don't care. A lot of things I don't care about, right? It doesn't get in the way, though. I want to be very clear on that. It does not interfere with my life or anything. I have to focus my eyes and see what it is.
Matter that is measurable, if you had the right equipment, that it's actually taking up that space? Or do you think it's just a projection of something from within you that you're projecting there?
So I wrote a blog post about 4 years ago called The Dark Matter. I thought it was dark matter, right? This thing we can't measure with the electromagnetic spectrum. Since then, I'm starting to believe maybe it's some kind of plasma field, right? Some kind of plasma field. So the answer to your question is maybe we can't do it now, but I without a doubt think we'll be able to do it. Somebody will figure this out, because a bunch of us will come together, we'll see the same thing objectively, and we'll start, and somebody who's maybe a physicist or whatever will say, oh, hey, wait a minute, let's try to measure with this, and they'll figure it out. I truly believe that's going to happen. So to answer your question, is it matter? I call it, in the 8 stages of upside vision, there's 2 different spaces I go to, right? One is the hidden biosphere. That is here with us, right? So that means there's something here that just you and I can't see because we're humans. And there's another place called that I call the organic metaverse, which is out there. That's Akashic records, symbolic knowledge, where all this math stuff is, astral projections. The stuff that's here around us, I think, it's not another dimension, in other words, right? It's literally here. We just can't see these other type of beings or whatever else is there.
So it's in our dimension, but it doesn't show up in the visible spectrum.
Right. There's a word I learned when I was researching this, and the word is spelled UMWELT. It's pronounced Umwelt. It's the way a biological organism moves through the environment, simplest terms. So you and I inhabit planet Earth with worms, birds, fish, bats, tigers. All of us occupy the same space. But the way a worm moves through the world is completely different than a human does. And they don't have the eyes or anything to see what we see. My Umwelt, the way I see the world, literally changed 13 years ago. The way I move through the world now is different than I moved through the world then, because something was added. Something opened up. I can see of more that's here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's very interesting, because there's something that comes to mind when I hear that. Especially when you say you think it's born out of trauma. I mean, I agree. Like, the human experience, I feel like the sensory organs that we have, smell, sight, hearing, touch, like the ones that we're aware of, I think there's more that we're not really aware of. But I feel like those have developed out of the need to survival. Like, I used to have a pet python when I was a teenager. And I remember learning that, you know, he didn't see the visible light spectrum like we do. Saw, I think, infrared. So, like, the mouse that he was chasing looked like a red blob, didn't look like what we see it. And it's like we develop the organs in the way that we need to survive. So, like, maybe the snake didn't need to have vision in the visual light spectrum of the EMF spectrum, like where it serves us better. Yeah. Because maybe it allows us to interact with our environment in a way that helps us more, whereas the snake with no arms and legs, and like maybe that's all it really needed, and energy went elsewhere. It did. But when I think of it being born, that function being born, and the structure that comes with that function being born out of the, like emerging out of the need for survival, I think of this characteristic that you have and other people seem to have also. When you say that a common thread that it is not derived, but emerges out of a traumatic experience. Like, is this a function that emerges out of the need to survive? Like, is this a way that humans are coping with trauma in some way? And if it helps you navigate the human experience while you're on this side of the dirt.
So yeah, I think absolutely. And individually, it's used in ways maybe people don't know, right? I mean, this is like a byproduct of trauma that they know how to survive in that environment. Collectively, why is it happening, I would say, right? So I've thought about this a lot too. So obviously, and it's about trauma, I mean, evolution changes because of the environment. And if we really, really, really think about the planet Earth now, you know, we talk about COVID, right? Forever chemicals, the environment, climate change, the pole shifts. So many things are happening on planet Earth outside of our autonomy and inside of us that I think this is an emergent ability that humans are having. Why? For survival. How? Communicate in a new way that we haven't before. Simply put is that. Now, that's kind of scary because that means we need it for a group thing, right? It's individually, but I think we need it for a group thing. And listen, the way the world's going, actually it makes sense. The way, you know, we see how the world's going. It's just another way for humans to communicate and grow and see the world. Because let me say one other thing that kind of piggybacks on that too, from my real experience. So everyone is all hot on AI. Right? It's like AI is the coolest thing ever. It's so fast and smart, but it's all it is human knowledge being regurgitated back to us with these giant fast LLMs. Look, they seem smart. They say the right things. Don't get me wrong. They're intelligent, but think about the rest of the universe, right? That's just our brains going to the computer. Whatever we're accessing, and all of us, I think, can access, are receiving something that is beyond, it's evolutionary intelligence over in one side, which is just beginning to tap, and AI over here. AI seems smart. Evolutionary intelligence obviously is smarter than we could ever know, and humans are just beginning to tap it and getting the knowledge around it. And whatever that future holds, because there's so much more than just our brains. I mean, think about it. Animal intelligence, plant intelligence, planet intelligence, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. I'm always baffled. I got a bunch of plants behind me. The intelligence that they exhibit is crazy to me. Like, they go places where you're like, how did it know to go there to grab that next vine or whatever?
Are you being serious, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No. I mean, I think plants have like crazy wisdom that we don't understand yet. So this is on the rise, you think? Like, this is a growing phenomenon.
I get emails all the time. Emails, and I tell people, listen, I'm just collecting. There's no next text. What's going to happen? So yes, the answer is yes. Now let's talk about what they did. You want to talk about what they did on ION so people understand what they part of the brain they measured? Can I tell you kind of what we did? We did 200 randomized tests over a few days back in 2023. They would hook my brain up to an EEG machine, and then they would pull an image up on a computer, let's say of the Eiffel Tower. Right? Then I would think of the Eiffel Tower with my mind's eye or memory recall. I would see it in my mind's eye. Then I would see the Eiffel Tower in front of me in holographic form. So we did 200 randomized tests across every single brain state, alpha, beta, gamma, theta, all of them, there was differences. The biggest difference, and this blew my mind, well, the theta state, there were big differences. But it was less surprising because that's where mediums typically see, you know what I mean? And clairvoyant people see things, activity in the theta state. The alpha state is, which is, if I understand it correctly, the resting brain state, the default mode network state, right? While I'm using UpSight, my alpha state is blowing up. It's working extra hard. Not only that, there's a left prefrontal cortex, I'm not saying this right, some part that's being suppressed over here. For these things to get in. And they're speculating why that's happening, for these images to get in or these waves to get in. I call them waves because they feel like they're waves. I mean, they're waves, like just like a wave or whether something is a wave or a photon. These are kind of the same kind of things. So that's what the testing has done. So yes, people are coming forward. There's no next text. coming out because this hasn't even been published yet. But I know there will be a lot of attention around this from the media. I don't know. I anticipate when it does. And they'll want to replicate it. They'll want to say, let's do this again, because there's going to be skeptics, which is understandable. The beautiful thing is I can do this on demand. I don't have to wait for any time or anything like that. So are you familiar with Dean Radin? Dean Radin studies kind of the psi phenomena and extrasensory brain perceptions at the Institute of Noetic Sciences in Northern California. Those team of scientists did it. There's a whole bunch of really smart people up there. It's founded by Edgar Mitchell, one of the first astronauts that came back from space. He founded this institute, and they study all kinds of stuff like that.
How did you get connected with them? Did they reach out?
I sent them an email. Oh, listen, okay. I sent over 100 emails to traditional academic institutes saying, listen, I know how I moved through the world before. I know what's going on now. There's no mental illness. I was definitely unwell, but without the drugs, believe it or not, there's no mental illness. I want to come in, and you guys need to look at this, because if you could do what I could do, you would be amazed. That's what I told them. But I was either politely declined or ignored. Finally, you know, back in 2022, Dean Radin said, let me talk to the team of scientists. I then talked to the team of scientists, and we agreed, okay, let's do this. That's it. That's how we did it. And they figured out what they were going to do.
So you mentioned that there is a part of the brain on the left side that gets suppressed, allowing for more activity on the right side?
Or more things to come in. I may not be saying that right. There's a blog on the Institute of Noetic Sciences that the scientists wrote. If you put in upside vision and blog noetics, it'll come up. They say it better. They use the scientific language. But yes, something like that is happening.
Because it makes me think, I've heard over the years that the left side of the brain is like the logic, where we get logic, where we try to make sense of things. And, the right side is where you can get more, artistic or abstract expressions. Like, I wonder if there's something to that. Like, part of the thing that allows it to happen is getting the side that's trying to figure everything out of the way. Out of the way.
I don't know. I don't know. Or the side that's dealing with our traditional senses, right? Or the side that's dealing with the traditional senses. Because I feel, but by the way, now my wife can make, and everyone can make a joke about this. This definitely made me smarter, right? So the question is, how smart was I before and how smart am I now? So we have fun with that. So objectively, I became interested in math. I became even, you could say, for a long time, obsessed with math in the beginning, because I can see these visual spatial images that exist in this space, just the same way a conch shell exists in our 3D space. I see these things that do not exist in our 3D space at all. And I became fascinated with them, and I started studying them and stuff like that. And then I came down the rabbit hole of math.
You mean like in regards to the geometry of this?
Geometry, sacred geometry, all that stuff in this place it's definitely sacred geometry, but it's more than that too. There's a structure to this space. There's a consistent structure to the space, the same way there are structured things like trees, how they look in our 3D space. And I've been having fun with that for the last, dozen years.
So what do you think the progression of this emergent technology, human technology is? Do you think it's just leading people to be able to communicate easier without using words, or understand each other better and make for a more peaceful place to live? Because with understanding of others, we're more compassionate and we don't other them as much. We don't fight wars. Or like, what do you think, like, there's some purpose behind it that is driving us in that direction?
I do. And I think all those things you said. Are you familiar with the telepathy tapes?
I've heard them talked about a little bit, on a podcast. I think I heard someone.
Okay. It's about nonverbal speakers and how they communicate nonverbally. One of the places they go, they call the hill, okay? I have a hypothesis that the place they call the hill is the same place that I'm seeing. So I think there is this place that we can access that is, just outside normal human perceptions. And when you are in that space and when you're communicating with other people there or seeing other people there, Yes, your guard is down. You are better, you are kinder, you're more open. You realize there's so much more that we're connected to, and it puts down all the walls. You can't lie, you can't deceive there, because there's no place to hide. Now, I say that, there's some trickster elements to that space, because I think other things show up, but the answer is yes, I think we'll need this. And it's not technology, it's physiological, it's like organic, it's evolution. Because we will need it to communicate better. And, you know, look, maybe we're upsite, homo upsite vision, right? So we're better than human, you know, Cro-Magnon, Neanderthal. Maybe this is the next evolutionary step, and we need it to communicate, and it makes us better, you know, just nicer, kinder, better, smarter, better to survive what's coming, whatever that looks like.
Do you think this is something that can be hijacked? Like, if someone had maybe an evil intent that they could manipulate through, like, I know that we interact with frequencies, and if you shine certain frequencies on the body or play frequencies through, whether it be like a sound delivery or an electromagnetic frequency, that it could alter the human state, alter our physiology. Is that something that somebody could shine a certain wavelength on somebody and kind of take over what they're seeing?
They could, from my experience and my doing it, there's definitely things that you see that can be extremely scary, right? So let's just say, just like a dream, you could see horrific things. I've seen horrific things. Now, the question is, where are those coming from? Because when I see them, let's just say I see somebody murder somebody in space. I don't have to look at that. I turn away. Right? I'm like, I don't want to see that. Anything like that. I have no idea where they were coming from. Is it coming from, I'm just picking up somebody else's subconscious? Or, to your point, I do think that you'd be able to add some kind of false waves to this space. However, I believe if you are in this space, you'll know that they're fake. I could be naive and wishful thinking, but they're coming from an ill-intentioned place. Because even the things that are horrible that I see, I don't think they're ill-intentioned. I just think it's what's, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I have no idea. So I think, yes, somebody, I don't want to say hijack it. They could pollute it or influence it. Yes, I do think that. But I think when you're in this space, you know the difference between, you can know the difference, the nuance between positive and good and maybe harmful or bad or whatever words we want to use, you know.
So if somebody wanted to explore their ability to do this or try to flex that muscle or train that muscle, where would they begin? Like, what's an example of something that somebody could do to, like, try to see a plasma field?
Okay, so that question I can't answer. So the first thing, there's two, I'll answer with both things. The first one is easier. The hypnagogic state, right before you go to sleep. A lot of inventions, creative ideas have happened in this space. If you can train yourself, sit on the end of a couch and get yourself in that hypnagogic state and think of something, let's
I'm
say.
Sorry, what are you saying? Not right hypnotic. You're saying
else. Hypnagogic. It's the state you're in, the brain state you're in. It's the waking dream state right before you fall asleep. It's a very short state. Okay.
So that's a theta wave state, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. I believe it is. If you get in that state and you start thinking you want to see an elephant and it appears right in front of you, that is the first thing. Now, if it appears and you can
So you hold, would need your eyes open because you're visually seeing.
No, good question. That's a fair question. Open or close. It does not matter. It will come through, right? It will come through. So if you see that, that's the first thing. If you can hold it, second, and if you can literally think, change that elephant into a, somebody riding a bicycle, you're off to the races.
Well, then how's that different than just imagining that?
Like, because it's outside of you. I mean, that's a fair question.
But if your eyes are closed, like I could see all kinds of things in my. What did you say? Like your mind's eye, or.
Well, this is the part of I can do this eyes open or closed. So it comes through the eyelids. So whatever this is, it's not our traditional vision senses. I just want to say that, you know, I don't know what it is. You can maybe make a case. It's a form of third eye, but you can use your third eye also without this, right? That's the challenge. You can use your third eye without this too, but this is a third eye with actually, waves that you're seeing. So you can do it eyes open or closed. If you can change with the thought, off to the races. And then if you can hold it over time. Now, let me talk about that too. There's something called microtubules in the brain, right? And these microtubules release a very, very small amount of light. right? Because I was sitting next to a scientist at the Institute of Neuroscience Scientists, and he's got something called the orchestrate HR theory of consciousness. And he says it's the consciousness comes in microtubules. When you were getting anesthesia and you're out, you're unconscious. When you're awake with it, it's when it happens in the microtubule state. I'm not saying it 100% correctly, but the whole idea is that they release light. Because I said to him, I said, well, I'm not really sure if they're holograms. That they're what they look like to me. And it's not like the brain can emit light. And he's like, actually, it can. And it does. So to answer your question, there's science behind this. There's the microtubules that are released that are inside the brain that, you know, that's where these lights could be coming from, at least my participation on my side of it. And the ones I'm seeing that I know are coming from you or feel like coming from you through the quantum entanglement or whatever you want to call it. The other ones, who knows where they're coming from? That's one of the challenges, you know, we got to find out. I think that's one of the challenges.
So go back to the how-to. So you get super relaxed, essentially, like you're dozing off sleep, and you have to be aware enough before dozing off. Like you have to be in this state and aware enough that you're trying to fixate your attention on
an image. Yeah, absolutely. Think of an image. Just think of an image that you saw, whatever image you want. You can have a picture. It doesn't matter. It could be as graphic, detailed, or as simple as you want. But if you see that, if all of a sudden you realize that it's out in front of you in a holographic form, because it's not your mind's eye. You know, you could literally picture, let's say, a poster of Star Wars. You could see all the colors in it. If I saw the Star Wars poster in front of me, it would be clear. It would be translucent. And, it would be moving. It would be moving. So it's not exactly the same thing, but it's kind of the same thing. It's based on the Star Wars poster. And the other
I can
one is
see how that would be really terrifying for a lot of people if they saw a three-dimensional thing in the space, in the room that they're in front of them, that they could, you could reach out and put your hand through it?
If you were wasted or high, you could think that, yes. And that's probably what happened to me when I was unwell. That this was going on with my brain. And let's be clear, people have these delusions all the time because maybe something is opening and they think it's real. So that was also, I wanted to make sure, I wanted to stay clean and sober. I wanted to make sure everyone realized I do not need drugs to do this, right? And I know this isn't real. People, the word hallucination is people see something, they think it's real. I know this isn't real, but it's also there. You know what I mean? It's coming from somewhere. So define, it's not like I think that person is. If I saw Ben Franklin, I know it's not Ben Franklin. I know it's some kind of waveform simulation of Ben Franklin coming from me, coming and sitting in front of me. So that's a challenge. And to answer your question, it can be terrifying. You know, absolutely. You're like, okay, you just stop doing it. If something is scary, I stop doing it. And sometimes, like to your point, something scary things show up.
It's funny you mentioned the word simulation. I wonder if we are in a simulation, which I know some people discuss, and maybe this is like an artifact of the video game that we're in.
I've talked about that. I think so. Yeah, I think we're living in a simulation.
You do?
You know? And well, yeah, and this one of the reasons is because of this, right? Because I'm seeing these simulated things. It's like, this is a simulation. I could be a simulation. Where's it coming from? What level is this, you know? Yeah, you know, it's certainly worth discussing, and it makes sense, right? It makes sense.
I don't think we're in a simulation, and also I hope we're not. I guess maybe it would explain some things, but my gut instinct is that that's not what we're experiencing. But I also think we don't really understand nearly as much as our, arrogant, egotistical minds think that we understand.
Well, that's why, you know, so the more people that can do this, the more conversations will happen around it. And there's somebody will bring insights with different backgrounds than me, right? That's what I want. I want somebody who's a trained physicist, an engineer, a scientist, any kind of a geneticist. I want them to come forward and say, okay, this is what I think it is. And here's why, based on their training.
Okay. Do you think you have do you feel like a sense of duty because of this special, I don't know what you call it, gift or thing that you have in your program, in your system?
Les, thanks for that question. It's, I think about that a lot because I actually just started making a living doing this year. I was doing it, I was talking about it on podcasts last year, and I was obsessed about this because I felt a duty, right? Now, I realized this year, I was like, you know what? I think I can help people. Not only is it a duty, but I can make a living at it. So, yes, I do feel like it's a calling. I feel like the universe is pulling me forward to do this. Thank God this year that I've made a living at it, but I was doing it before that. And again, with the scientific paper coming out, there's something externally that's good and valuable and kind that wants me to do this to connect people. So, yeah, I appreciate that question. The answer is yes, I do feel like there's a duty to do this.
What do you think people like get out of it? Like, I know for me in the last week, it's got me thinking about a few things. There were other things that we talked about. And honestly, like the skeptic in me was like, well, I kind of prompted you for some of those things. So I don't know how to hold your feedback. And this is not like, I'm not attacking the thing or you or the process. I want to be like as unbiased as I can.
Sure.
So I'm like, I'm definitely putting more value on the stuff on the early part of the session before you really asked me any questions about myself, because I feel like after that, you were like, what do you want to work on? And then my information is obviously going to affect your process, has to. So, I know for me what I've gotten out of so far, it's got me like pondering this idea that I alluded to earlier about the costume and such. And, you know, maybe just the attention on that winds up allowing me to shift further and further into a direction that I desire as far as whatever I view myself to be, I don't know, my highest self or whatever, whatever my target is or goalpost I'm aiming for. But, on average, or for others, like, what do people, like, why do people reach out for this service, and what do they look to get out of it, and what do they report back, I guess? What's the feedback you get of what they do get out of it?
Okay, I'll give three different kinds of people. I told you the business owners and the creative people. But some people want to do it just to see what's there. It's like a radiologist getting a body scan and just to see what's there. People come to it for the fun of that. Okay. The second one is that they're trying to make a decision and they want help on something, right? That's the biggest one. So when we look at something like that, so we'll go through a session, I'll see all these things. And let's say, for example, I'll give you a perfect example of something. So you have to have the intention, by the way, Les, right, with that. So the conversation does have to happen. So let's say I see somebody doing a business deal. We talk about all the parts of the business deal. And in this thing, every dream part, say the wife enters the picture, right? And the guy says, well, she's not part of this business deal. I don't understand why she keeps coming in, right? And I don't either, right? Again, this is his stuff. Well, come to find out, he talks to the wife, and she doesn't want to do the deal. She thinks it's a bad idea. So things show up that are below the consciousness or there that we don't know about, and it takes time to look at. That's just one example. But when people want stuck, when people are stuck, people are curious about what's there. People want to look about a relationship, right? They're like, okay, why aren't these things happening? Again, we're asking these questions. Fair enough. And the universe is going to show us what it shows us. And a lot of people have these blocks. I would say the biggest thing is people have self, they put these blocks up in themselves and they show up and we kind of chip away at them. Or IKEA furniture model. I give them the tools, I give them the furniture, but they do the work later with a friend, a therapist, or a mentor. Those are the different ways people come forward.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, this is an interesting topic, Tom. You have a weird line of work. And
yeah, I do.
I'm glad that you found a way to pay your bills with it, I guess.
Yeah, me too. And it's fun. And like I said, I do think it's a calling and it's a pleasure. You know, if anything else unfolds with your reading, you know, to let me know, I'd be curious about that too. But people can look at some people I've read online and they can look at the reviews and stuff like that. And, you know, if they reach out and they want to get a reading, I'd be happy to do it. But even if not, just spreading the word that this is happening, that was my goal from the beginning. That's more important than even the other thing.
Well, if they want to learn more, you said you had a book out on the topic or?
Well, no, the book is my psychotic year, Jesus Goes to Hollywood, okay. A Memoir of Madness. Actually, let me finish on that. If you're struggling and going through addiction or anything else and you have a family that's going through it, if I could come out of it the other side and be better, then I know they can too. I wanted to say that. This book is about my one psychotic year and how I got through it because it was really, really bad. The worst, you know, other than I'm still alive. Any bad thing you could think happened did, but I came out the other side and I'm better for it. But that's what the book is about. It's definitely not about upside vision.
Gotcha.
Now, the eight stages of upside. Well,
good for you, by the way, for
thank you.
Getting through. Addiction is tough. I myself have quit. I've had dealt with addictions of cocaine and alcohol and opiates and quit them all. And it's a thing.
It is a thing. Life is hard. Yeah. The eight stages of upside vision is a free PDF you can get on my website. Just got to put your email in and download it. And if it resonates with you, do that too. But yeah, it was a pleasure, Les. I really enjoyed this today. I'm glad we got to connect today other than the reading from the other day.
And all your readings, are they're all via like a Zoom call, or do you do any of these in person?
Yeah, I just did one last week. I do about a handful a month in Atlanta, Metro Atlanta area.
Okay.
Yeah, you can sign up for all of them, or online or in person, either way.
So you have like a space, an office for this?
You know, I never do it in my home. I go to their office or I go
really?
To last week, I just don't. You know, last week I go to their office or their home. Last week we did it in a park, which was really cool. It was a little harder because the light, but we found a shelter.
So you need a dark space, preferably.
Definitely. The light cannot be in my eyes. I can do it, but it will. My eyes, so much stuff gets in. Make no mistake, I can still see them, but it's just a little, more stuff comes in, and it's just draining is the word.
And for people that want to check out more of your stuff or follow you, where do they go?
Just go to Tom Matt, the website, tommatt.com. I'm on Instagram, Upside Vision. Google Upside Vision and my name. You'll find my website. You'll find all my social media. And follow me wherever you want. Actually, I'm not even allowed on social media. But from time to time, you can follow all of them. Instagram, and maybe X.
You're not allowed by
who? No, I just don't. I'm busy. I'm doing the readings, right?
Gotcha.
I do this. I do podcasts. They talk about it. And then I get the couple of weeks is filled up with readings.
Okay.
So that's how that works.
And can you repeat, if people want to learn about that study reference, what was the organization or something? Or
IONS, the Institute of Noetic Science. Just Google or type in IONS and then the word upside vision, and two blogs will come up. And one of those, or actually both of them, link to a preprint of an academic paper that's coming out soon. Okay, that's the final version is coming out, I think, the last week of November, again, and they'll get more attention and interest around it at that time, too. But
gotcha. Well, Tom, I want to appreciate you taking the time, appreciate the offering of your service last week. That was an interesting process, and I'm still going to think on that a little bit. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. Hope you enjoyed the conversation today, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Thank you, Les.